You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Wednesday, the 17th of December, 2025, a day where the Australian share market fell, the S&P ASX 200 down by 0.16%. We'll have the details with Kyle Rodder from Capital.com in a few moments. But first, to the government's mid-year economic and fiscal outlook, where it's projected an underlying budget deficit for 2025-26 of $36.8 billion, but that is better than the $42 billion previously. CPI forecast this financial year to rise to 3.75% and to 2.75% in the following financial year. Economists, though, say the government expenditure is expected to rise from 26.2% of GDP last year to 26.9%. So what does it mean for inflation? For that and more, I spoke with Shane Oliver, the chief economist at AMP. So, Shane, what does this budget update suggest about government spending and whether it is indeed inflationary?
Well, the bottom line is that it doesn't really tell us a lot about whether the government spending is inflationary or not. And, of course, the government is not going to admit to that in the first place, because the last thing they want to be seen as being the blame for high inflation and high interest rates. But we do know, and any economist will tell you this, is that public spending is a source of demand in the economy, and higher than otherwise public spending, and that's what we've been seeing for several years now, means higher demand in the economy. That in turn eats into spare capacity and adds to inflation. So we've got relatively high public spending continuing at those relatively high levels. I know the Treasurer has cut back things a little bit, but the overall change is trivial in the great scheme of things. So we've got ongoing high levels of public spending. That, of course, is resulting in higher than otherwise inflation and also higher than otherwise interest rates in the economy, as the public sector is effectively competing with the private sector for scarce resources. That's resulting in higher prices and higher interest rates.
What do you think it means, again, if we go into more detail about the future of interest rates? Because what's interesting at the moment is that we're seeing more experts predict, at the very least, that a rate cut in 2026 is pretty much off the table, and we're seeing the threat of higher interest rates from February exist.
I must admit that we ourselves have moved away from just a few months ago anticipating rate cuts to now seeing rates on hold through next year with a high risk that rates could go higher. And that's because of that upwards pressure we've been seeing on inflation. Unfortunately, the budget update doesn't really relieve that risk, for the simple reason that it leaves in place still very high levels of government spending, and the government spending still has to compete with the private sector to get scarce resources, which can mean higher inflation and higher interest rates. So if we'd seen the Treasurer come out today with a much lower level of spending over the current year and going into the subsequent years, then I would have been, that would have given me some confidence that, well, maybe we won't see higher interest rates. But unfortunately, we didn't see that. The budget numbers were tweaked a little bit, but they still leave in place record levels of public spending, which in turn is adding to inflationary pressures, and that's a pressure on the Reserve Bank.
So do you would it be fair to blame the government for an interest rate rise, or is it just a contributor to the rate rise?
Look, I would see government as a contributor to the rate rise. Some would say, well, it's been good to have strong government spending over the last few years because that's helped fill the gap left by a weakened private sector. But the bottom line is you've now got still strong government spending and private sector spending, consumer spending, business investment, which is picking up. Basically, the government needs to get out of the way. If it doesn't get out of the way, it will contribute to higher inflation than otherwise, and that will be a contributor to higher interest rates. But they're not the sole blame. You can't just blame them alone. It is a bit much bigger picture issue than that.
And finally, speaking of big picture, migration policy, migration forecasts, what do they suggest about, I guess, the housing supply story?
Well, the good news is that the immigration numbers are coming down. A few years ago, we were seeing immigration levels at record highs. And don't get me wrong here, I think immigration has been fantastic for Australia. But it's just that we had too many people coming in all at once. leading to excessive demand for housing. We couldn't meet that demand, so we got a housing shortage and excessive house prices. That is now starting to come back into balance. We're now seeing net migration numbers come down on the government's projection to 310,000 for the last financial year, down again to 260,000 for this year and falling in subsequent years. So that will take some of the pressure off. But in the absence of a huge pickup in housing supply, then I don't think it's enough to eat into the undersupply of housing that's built up over the last few years. So bottom line is we are coming back into better balance by getting immigration levels down, but we've built up a huge undersupply over the last few years on our estimates of around 200,000 to 300,000 dwellings. And the immigration projections and even optimistic estimates in terms of housing supply suggest that that undersupply will remain in place for many years to come.
That's Shane Oliver there, Chief Economist at AMP. Let's take a look at the Australian share market now, where the S&P ASX 200 fell 0.16% to 8,585. 10 of 11 sectors were lower, the worst performing healthcare, followed by energy and consumer staples. The materials sector, the only one to rise today. Best and worst stocks, Liontown, the best performer today. The lithium company up by about 12%, followed by IGO Limited and Catalyst Metals. The worst performing stocks, a couple of defence related stocks there. Austal, the shipbuilder, down by around about 12%. Drone Shield also losing 12%. The worst performer, GrainCorp, off by 15% today. For more on the day's market action, including reaction to US economic numbers, I spoke with Kyle Rodder, a senior market analyst at Capital.com. Kyle, first of all, let's talk about the US jobs data out overnight. What does it say about the US economy and the implication for US interest rates?
Well, it suggests that effectively the US may require in the not too distant future more interest rate cuts. And it provides us a little bit of a clue as to why the Fed last week was a little bit more dovish in its commentary. The interesting dynamic, though, is that we haven't seen the markets pricing in aggressively imminent interest rate cuts, despite that jump in the unemployment rate. There could be a number of reasons behind that. The markets are still pricing in that there will be two rate cuts before the end of 2026 from the Fed. There is a little bit of a divergence there with what the Fed said in a summary of economic projections last week, which suggested only the one. So there's still that push and pull going on in the rates markets to determine which direction Fed policy will go. Inflation data to round out the week will be very important too, because that's the other side of the equation. But on balance, the US economy is clearly losing a little bit of steam. The labor market is building what seems to be like a lot of slack. And again, on balance of things, that weighs towards the argument that further rate cuts might be necessary.
Okay. Let's talk commodities if we can, because oil has taken another tumble, now at levels last seen in 2021. Why and what do you think this means for consumers, for motorists especially?
Well, it's a supply and demand story, quite naturally. The demand story has looked increasingly soft because of some patchy global growth. We've seen China data at the start of the week is a part of that. Even the US data is a part of that as well. And there is the sense that going into next year that we're in a sort of mixed footing, if not a sluggish footing for global growth. But of course, the other side of that is the demand outlook. And OPEC has, for several months, worked reasonably hard to try and increase output. Certainly at the start of the year, reduced the production cuts that had supported prices. And it's been reasonably motivated by market share and basically, moving volumes over price and revenues for these major members of the cartel. And a lot of that is to try and discipline members within the cartel who weren't complying with previous output policy, but also to defend OPEC market share from other players like in the United States who profit from who have break-even costs much higher than OPEC members. So it'll be interesting to see if OPEC steps in here to try and allow prices to sort of stabilize a little bit. A bit of a rule of thumb recently is that they've tried to keep prices around $60 or so. But the market implications is that, well, for starters, fewer cost of living pressures if energy prices do subside, but potentially weaker stock prices for energy companies, and of course, lower costs at the bowser for consumers if we continue to see this trend unfold.
Okay. Westpac has today become the latest bank here to cancel its interest rate cut call for 2026. They're now predicting rates at least will stay on hold. Yesterday, we heard from the Commonwealth and NAB both revising their rate calls to a rate rise in February. So what's the market now expecting?
The market's expecting a hike this year and then another one potentially at the start of 2027. So we're talking the space of 18 months, 50 basis points of hikes. And there's a few implications here. Obviously, the obvious one is that inflation is sticky and moving away from target. The extension of that is that maybe policy easing the last, say, 50 basis cuts or so might have been in excess of what the economy actually requires. And it's a concerning development for both households, obviously, which may have to be slugged by higher mortgage rates once again, but also the economy more broadly and investors, because it suggests that the basically speed limit for the Australian economy or the growth potential of the Australian economy is, relatively low compared to trend. That non-inflationary growth rate is probably going to be below 2%, and that means that earnings might be a little bit weaker, especially for those domestic companies that derive a lot of their earnings from domestic sources. And then there's also the problem of higher interest rates just putting the squeeze on equity valuations. So the market's pricing in hikes. It's suggesting that, again, inflation's still a problem, and it's equally a problem for households as it is for investors.
At the end of the day, then, what are you telling your clients and where do you see the opportunities for them in 2026?
Well, a little bit of a sort of deviation from the themes of the day, but I think the really overarching story that's driving the markets at the moment, it's still artificial intelligence, but artificial intelligence in the context of elevated of valuations, and valuations by some metrics that are higher or as high as the dot-com bubble, and then pretty much no other precedent in history. And so what I'm sort of saying is effectively for both investors and policymakers, which if you look at the Fed's decision last week, the productivity boom that's expected to come from AI is really being discounted in the Fed's projections for inflation and bringing inflation down. Is that if that AI trade doesn't pay off next year in 2026, all this investment doesn't pay off, there'll be big questions about valuations, fair value for equities, and whether there'll be a compression in valuation. So a bit more thematic there, but I still think that basically 2026 has to be when the AI trade starts to pay off. If it does, we could still see the bull market keep running. If it doesn't, then maybe, again, valuations might have to deflate a little bit.
That's Kyle Rotter there from Capital.com, and he wraps up the podcast for this Wednesday. Don't forget, if you enjoy it, give it a rating or review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Click that subscribe button and I'll see you tomorrow.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.